The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
This is the Brad Sessmatt Show here on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy. Have a very busy show for you. We are going to cover a lot of ground. It is week one of the NFL season, NCAA in full swing, high school football in full swing, the Diamondbacks making some noise in the wild card standings, and a lot of other things with the Coyotes, just a lot to get to. So we're going to waste no time. This rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. On today's show, we have Brandon Huffman, 24/7 Sports. This guy, nobody does it better. When it comes to recruiting, he is an encyclopedia. He is an insider. He knows everything going on the recruiting scene, both locally with Arizona, also Arizona and Arizona State. He's going to Skype in. We chatted, some of it was featured on Brad Sessmatt's Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona this week, talking about some of the big out-of-state matchups that various high school teams have been playing and will be playing, and some of the ones that he's really targeting to see some of the top recruits in Arizona go head-to-head with other guys from out-of-state. One other wrinkle in here is Mater Dei, one of the best high school programs in the entire country, coming in the state this week to play Centennial. Centennial, I think, among one of the teams to have the most success against these top out-of-state opponents. They've had some really big wins against some top California teams over the past couple of years. But there's an interesting wrinkle here, because Jaden Daniels, ASU's quarterback, did not play at Mater Dei, but he knows a lot of these guys because of the 7-on-7 circuit. ASU has already offered a lot of those guys. I think slightly unfortunate timing for ASU, because they'll be playing while Centennial's playing, so ASU won't be able to go check out that game, and those guys on Centennial may not be able to stick around for another day to check out ASU. The timing would have been nice had it been a Saturday game for ASU, but an interesting wrinkle in there, and we kind of dive deep into that. And then Jody Jackson, she hosted Brad Sessmatt's Football AZ here on Fox Sports Arizona. She is joined by Bertram Berry to help preview week one for the Cardinals going up against the Lions. They do a really good job on Cardinals overtime. Jody, Arizona sports fans, like, do not take Jody Jackson for granted. She has been a staple of Arizona sports coverage for a long time. There are few that do it better than her, if any. She is just someone that I think, as a reporter, I look up to her. I've learned a ton from her, and she does a tremendous job each and every game, no matter what sport it is, no matter what team it is. She just brings a level of professionalism and does a great job getting information out to the public. Just got to give a shout out to Jody Jackson. Thank you for hosting Brad Sessmatt's Football AZ as we navigate and head full on into football season. So with that, let's focus here on the Diamondbacks. They've won 8 of 9. They are now 3.5 back in the wild card standings with about 25 games left to play. And I would say it's a pretty favorable schedule. With who they're playing, the Padres, they have a couple series against the Reds, going to play the Marlins, Cardinals, Padres again, Reds again, the Mets are mixed in there. So in terms of quality of opponent, look, it's not college football. It's not going to be, you know, strength of schedule or anything like that. It's going to come down to how many wins are you able to get. So in that way, I think that the Diamondbacks should be feeling pretty good about where they're standing and where their opponents moving forward are. On the other hand, the teams in front of them continue to win. They have made up a ton of ground in this streak, just about 2 games, because the teams ahead of them continue to be doing a nice job. Chicago struggled a little bit, but you have the Nationals and Philadelphia that Arizona is looking up at right now. So not making up a ton of ground. They've moved some teams out of the way. The Brewers, the Mets, they've leapfrogged. But I think the key here, they're going to be going for the sweep against the Padres. And we haven't seen many sweeps from the Arizona Diamondbacks this year. And they've been very close. They've had, as one of my old baseball coaches said, very, we'll say graphically, I guess, you have your foot on the person's throat. Like, it's almost wrapped up. You know, you've got this going. You just got to finish the job. The Diamondbacks have struggled to finish the job, and I can think of a couple of different instances where against the Dodgers, they were lined up for a four-game sweep. And late in the game, Cody Bellinger hits a ball pretty much to Awatuki, and then that they go to extras, end up losing the game. They've twice, on two separate occasions, they have been in the last inning and a half of pulling off a sweep against the Rockies and not able to pull it out. They've had these opportunities plenty of times, and it's got to be concerning when it's going to come down to every single game matters. Because those three or four games, yeah, you can point to a lot of games where things didn't go quite right. And I don't want to key in specifically on these games and say this is the reason they're not going to make it. But when the really good teams close those games out, you take care of business, they got the sweep, they keep the momentum going. Then what's happened in the past is, you know, come from behind win for the opposing team. Usually it's an off day the next day. The team kind of has to sit on it. In one instance, that started a five. It was like a 5-12 May for the Diamondbacks. It started a lot of struggles. And say what you will about momentum, some people gauge it differently. I think it's a part of sports. I don't think it's this immovable force and you can't reverse it. But I think it plays a role. And I think that played a role in the Diamondbacks, and that could be one of the differences with them not making the playoffs this year if they're not able to do that. So I think they need to go in. This is going to be really good baseball analysis. They need to go in and finish the job against the Padres. It's a team that's out of it. It's a team that has had some injuries. Fernando Tatis Jr. is now out for, it seems like, going to be the rest of the year. They're a team that is playing for the end of the season. Take care of business against these guys. Take care of business against the Reds. The Mets have been pretty competitive, but just knock them completely out of the wild card race. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there with, what, two and a half weeks left in the season, and you're that much closer to the wild card, I would have to imagine. But what this team's been able to do has been very impressive. Obviously overcoming a lot of injury, overcoming a lot of, changes within the rotation, within the lineup. This time last year, the Diamondbacks were pitching with Zach Greinke and Pat Corbin. Neither one of them are here now. This time last year, Paul Goldschmidt was going on a tear. AJ Pollock was playing relatively healthy. And neither one of them are there. Jake Lamb hasn't played much this year. Christian Walker has had some ups and downs. I thought he's stepped in nicely, though. But you see what Ketel Marte has done, Eduardo Escobar. The Diamondbacks now have an everyday catcher in Carson Kelly. Luke Weaver, when healthy, I think has proven to be a top three guy in the rotation. So they're setting themselves up nicely. But let's see what they can do the rest of this month. I think if at the start of the year, with all of these changes happening last offseason, and you also tell somebody, oh, yeah, on trade deadline day, they're going to give up Zach Greinke. And it's going to be for no, Josh Rojas is now a major league player. But predominantly, it is for cash relief and also prospects. And you tell them that they're going to be where they're at in the standings right now, I think they're going to be pretty happy. And I think Diamondback fans should be pretty happy. But again, it comes down to closing the deal, being able to, you know, just put a bow on a sweep, have an off day Thursday, go to the Reds, keep it rolling, because they haven't been able to do that quite yet this year too many times. It's a number of games that could be the difference if whether they are playing their October baseball or they are going home with a near miss. A lot of fun stuff here moving forward with the Diamondbacks. It was nice to see Merrill Kelly get back to what he did in the first half. Really strong outing. He struggled mightily. I was on Justin Spears' radio show yesterday for ESPN Tucson, and he kind of asked, all right, we've talked a lot about the rotation and kind of setting up for the future. Could there be an odd man out here? And I said, look, right now kind of Merrill Kelly's pitching for his job. He certainly pitched for his job last night. He did a tremendous job and really kind of Torrey gave him a call to action, and he acted. So it was a strong start by him. They just needed two runs, first inning, taking care of business. Got a little interesting at the end, but Archie Bradley able to close it out. So coming up next, we are going to talk about a lot of NFL. Also a crazy story about how a sporting event led to a cannabis raid. How's that for a tease? That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I am Jordan Hamm. On a busy Wednesday, going to talk some NFL here, a little WNBA. But want to kick this segment off with one of the stranger stories I've seen come across ESPN. So there is a cycling race in Spain, Vuelta a España, and I am sorry for butchering that pronunciation. So this is a high-quality broadcast. So they had a helicopter tracking the cyclists through the final kilometers of the eighth stage. Had a camera on it, and as they were panning, it was a bird's-eye view, and it panned over an apartment rooftop with 40 marijuana plants spread out across two abandoned plots. So that led to a cannabis raid. Now, say what you will about the legality of if cannabis should be legal, should not, whatever. This is just a funny story that you never know how this is gonna, you know, what you're gonna find when you turn a camera on and what's gonna be in the background, what's gonna be video bombed or photo bombed. In this case, it was pot plants. So a lot of good stuff going on with the NFL. It is week one, obviously. Games are counting. Everyone's doing their fantasy drafts. This morning, Ezekiel Elliott's came to terms, 6 years, $90 million. That is $50 million guaranteed, and that surpasses Todd Gurley's $45 million as the most for an NFL running back. Elliott is 24, and this will lock him down with the Cowboys until 2026. Now, there's a lot has been made with what the Cowboys have had to do to navigate this. They had Ezekiel Elliott holding out. Dak Prescott is on the verge of needing a new contract. Amari Cooper, who they traded a first-round pick for. And they went Zeke. They also, a couple weeks ago, it was Jalen Smith, the outside linebacker. And Lyle Collins got a deal yesterday. He was the one that played for LSU. And if I remember correctly, right around draft time, his girlfriend got murdered, and there was an investigation into his connection. There was no connection that was found, but that was right as the draft process was happening, so nobody took him. So they had a top, 50 player in this draft, probably higher than that, probably top 30 first-round pick, who was a undrafted free agent, and the Cowboys signed him, I believe it was a two-year, $15 million deal, quite a bargain. And now they have extended him as well. So that is kind of the route they're going right now. They're sticking with the running back. They're addressing the offensive line, addressing the pass rushers. And one of the biggest storylines this offseason is now over. He's signed. He's ready to go. And we'll see if there's any sort of, he's got to shake the cobwebs off at all. I would imagine he would, even though he was training in Cabo. You can't replicate those sorts of reps. And in the preseason, everyone's going half speed. And, you're in for a quarter, if that. So I don't think it would take long for him to get up to speed, but we'll see if he does need to shake any of those cobwebs off. On the other end, Antonio Brown took to his Instagram, which is rarely, if you're a Raiders fan and you hear Antonio Brown took to his Instagram, that's rarely a good thing, I would imagine. That doesn't garner usually a good reaction. He was upset because Mike Mayock sent him a letter that he was being fined for $54,000 for missing various events throughout the offseason. Part of that because of his helmet dispute. I believe most of that is where that came from. He's also been injured with his frostbitten feet. So what a weird offseason. Like, Raiders went all in. They wanted to get one of the greatest showmen in the NFL. It would transition perfectly going from Oakland to Las Vegas. You get your quarterback, one of the best receivers in the entire game, if not the best. And this guy just can't stay out of his own way. Now, we'll see once these feet are healthy. Is this going to affect anything? I just have to think John Gruden and Mike Mayock, who have been on the other end, who have been on the media side of things and have reported on some of these antics that crazy players have, they were not anticipating any of this. In an Instagram post, Brown took a photo of the letter, and his caption was, "When your own team want to hate, but there's no stopping me now. Devil is a lie. Everyone got to pay this year, so we clear." And he tagged the Raiders right above Mike Mayock's signature. So say what you will with the Arizona Cardinals and the struggles that they've had, and no one really knows if this is, you know, going outside the box is going to work. But at least they don't have too many of these types of issues. Yeah, Patrick Peterson has had his fair share in the last 12 months. But prior to that, it was nothing. And I think a lot of, you know, it's so hard to sift through kind of the he said side of things with the Patrick Peterson issues. But it sounded like it stemmed a lot from his suspension. So aside from that, yes, that to not have your best football player for roughly half the season and him demanding trades on multiple occasions certainly has been an issue. It seems like it hasn't been as drawn out. Now it seems over. It doesn't seem as drawn out as this Antonio Brown situation has, which has just been absolutely bananas. Jared Goff signs an extension with the Rams, $134 million. Josh Weinfuss, Cardinals ESPN reporter, posed a good question about Kyler Murray. How much are the Cardinals going to need to pay Kyler Murray a couple years from now, should things go how the Cardinals are planning? That's the crazy thing about these NFL contracts, and as screwed up as they can be with you know, the lack of guaranteed money and, you know, positions like running backs consistently being underpaid because they have a short shelf life historically, and you know, a lot of times you can find a rookie running back on that rookie contract and just kind of run him into the ground for 4 or 5 years and then give him a slightly bigger contract, or he holds out and then just kind of move on from him and find another guy to replace him. The quarterback position continues just to go up, 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 up. And I don't know where this is going to stop. I really don't. Because Jared Goff has been very good. And I've heard people say, oh, he's a system quarterback, and a lot of this is for because of Sean McVay, because look what he did with Jeff Fisher. Yes, Jeff Fisher, that was one of the worst offensive staffs and systems ever in NFL history, and I watched the Cardinals' offense last year. But yeah, that's the point. You find a good coach to bring the best out of your best players and most important players. Jared Goff, say what you will about anybody else on that roster, Jared Goff, you have a quarterback in the NFL, you're usually pretty good. Like, there's no way around that. You have a good quarterback, and you're able to protect him. I guess that's one of the few caveats, because we're looking at Andrew Luck the past couple of years. You have an important, good quarterback. If he's constantly on his ass, it's not going to matter. But you're able to protect him enough. You have a good quarterback, you're usually in the hunt for the postseason. So yeah, they keep putting a ton of money down on these players. And yeah, Jared Goff, I'd say top 10 quarterback. I don't know if he's in the top 5. He's got a ton of weapons around him. They've set themselves up very nicely to make sure he's successful, which is what teams should do, which Cardinals, take note. do what the Cowboys did. Go find Lyle Collins. Make sure that he protects Kyler Murray, whoever that those offensive linemen may be. Go invest in some of those top guys and take care of that quarterback. And yeah, you may be looking at a very big contract for Kyler Murray moving forward if things go according to plan. And that's just the way the league has been going. So, huge contracts coming in week one. And it's I feel like a lot of these conversations are now going to end. Melvin Gordon, looks like it's probably starting to bleed into the regular season. He's looking for a trade. Sounds like the Chargers aren't going to be giving him any big money. He's been a great talent, but we'll see what happens with that. So good to have football fully back in the full swing of things. Our weekends are getting much busier, but that's a good thing. I enjoy this time of year. It is hairs on fire consistently, but it's a fun fire. If there is one, I don't know. Coming up next, we have Brandon Huffman joining me to talk about all things recruiting in the state, ASU, U of A, and some of the out-of-state opponents that these Arizona high schools have been playing, and what does that mean for the state and kind of how they're represented throughout the entire country. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show. Welcome into the Recruiting Roundup. I'm Jordan Hamm. It is a very busy time of year. Arizona high school football is in full swing, and there's a lot of games in-state, out-of-state that we want to cover and some prospects that we really want to highlight. And with that, I'm going to bring in Brandon Huffman of 24/7 Sports. Nobody does it better. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jordan.
So before we get to the current recruits, I want to take a look at a certain quarterback from last recruiting class who has a pretty big opportunity now. Keaton Slovis over at USC with JT Daniels now out for the year. Just what do you make of him stepping in and running this Graham Harrell offense really for the duration of the season?
Well, the first thing is, did you know that Kurt Warner was his offensive coordinator in high school? Because I don't think that got brought up at all this weekend on any of the broadcasts or any of the radio.
It's been mentioned a time or two, yep.
That might be the new Brock Osweiler, 6'8". I'll tell you what, I thought he actually looked pretty calm and collected. I mean, when you look at some of the games this weekend involving true freshman quarterbacks, obviously Arizona State had a true freshman. They're going up against teams that aren't as tough. Boise State, you had Hank Bachmeyer, who went in. He at least knew he was going to start, looked rough for first half. I mean, Slovis probably thought he was just going to go in and at any point, maybe late in the game, make a couple of handoffs here and there. But he gets thrown to the fire right away in a game that's still a pretty competitive contest. I actually thought he looked good. It didn't help him that on the first throw that he made, his receiver fumbled it. So that probably puts a little bit of pressure on him, puts a little bit of pressure on the offense. But I thought he actually looked pretty good for coming in just with really no expectation to play. And Fresno State, I'll tell you, they may have lost a lot of guys to graduation. They still have a good defense. They're a well-coached team, and they were bringing heat all night, and that's what led to the JT Daniels injury. I thought Slovis actually made himself look pretty good. He's going to have another big test this week against Stanford and a much stronger defense, but I thought he acquitted himself pretty well this week.
Now, when we look at what Arizona's been able to do this high school football season with out-of-state, Saguaro with a close loss, Desert Vista with a close loss, with a couple of California teams. I know that there's a couple on your radar up in the Pacific Northwest that you want to check out. Just how would you kind of gauge where Arizona's at as they're playing these out-of-state competition and how they stack up with that competition?
Well, I think, probably a lot of the buzz is coming. How does Saguaro lose with all their Division I talent? That Cathedral Catholic team that they lost in San Diego is a very, very good program. It's been one of the best programs consistently in San Diego for a long time. They won some state championships. They lost in overtime last year in the Division I state championship game to a very stacked Folsom team that actually Cathedral Catholic had the lead in that game late before Folsom won. So this is a Cathedral Catholic team that may not have a lot of elite talent on it. It may not have the recruits like Saguaro, but it's a great program. There's always good football in that San Diego area. And I thought Saguaro put themselves, you know, gave themselves a good test in having to play a Cathedral team. But that's a team that I spent some time with some of their players this summer when I was in San Diego. Those guys have been hungry since losing that game in overtime, and they've been kind of on a mission. So I think Saguaro probably got a very hungry and very angry Cathedral team, really trying to prove that last year's loss was a fluke. And they just happened to run it in at the wrong time. But I like seeing the scheduling. I like seeing these Arizona teams coming out and playing teams in Southern California or bringing teams from California out to Arizona. There's a couple teams coming up to Seattle in a couple weeks. Higley High School out of Gilbert's coming up to play Rainier Beach in Seattle. And then Pinnacle at Phoenix is going to play the number one team in the state of Washington in Eastside Catholic, which will get the most anticipated matchup of the offseason, of the season, in JT Tuimoloau, who's the number one player in the country for 2021, against the elite offensive tackle Tosh Baker. So that'll be a big game for Arizona, because there's a lot of people thinking that that Pinnacle team could beat this Eastside Catholic team, and that would be huge for them to beat, because Washington's starting to get a lot of the buzz lately, the state of Washington and the football in Washington, and maybe they're the team that's starting to put themselves as the number two state behind California in terms of the talent, in terms of the depth of players going on. So that's going to be a big game, I think, for both those states.
All eyes, at least here in Arizona, are on the Centennial modern day matchup. Centennial's had some success against some of these out-of-state competition. Just what do you make of that matchup, and what sort of players should Arizona fans and Arizona State fans keep an eye on this modern day roster?
Well, modern day is loaded. I mean, they have the number one dual threat quarterback in the country in Bryce Young. He's a five-star quarterback, led him to a state championship last year. 2 years ago, modern day won. It was an undefeated national champion. They're the number one team in the country for a reason. They destroyed a very good Corona Centennial team, which I know Arizona State fans are very familiar with that program. Arizona as well. J.J. Taylor is an alum of Centennial. But modern day went and smacked them in their season opener. And then last week beat Villa Park. This week, Peoria Centennial gets that opportunity to pull off an upset. But this modern day team, they lost a lot of guys at graduation. Brew McCoy graduated. Keon Ware Hudson went to Oregon. They lost a number of players to Power Five schools, but they reloaded. They still have, coming back, one of the elite 2022 prospects in the country, Domani Jackson, who took over for Elias Ricks and Darion Green-Warren in the secondary. C.J. Williams is a big receiver. They still have Bryce Young back. They have Kyron Ware Hudson, who's the younger brother of the Oregon defensive lineman. They have Rajon Davis and Jalen Davies, both who guys that Arizona and Arizona State have offered. Arizona State, now remember, with Arizona State getting Jaden Daniels in the 2019 class, he played for Ground Zero 7-on-7. Ground Zero is where a lot of the modern-day players, such as Davies and Rajon Davis, play for. Arizona State was one of the first to offer a lot of these guys, so there's a lot of modern-day players with Arizona State offers. There's a lot of talent on modern day, and I think this is going to be a tough game for Centennial. We saw what happened when they played Eastside Catholic last year. This modern day team's on a completely different level than that Eastside Catholic team. Modern day right now is arguably the number one team in the country, with St. John Bosco, their Trinity League rival, number two. Right now, I think modern day is just gearing up to be playing for a state championship once again.
Talking to Brandon Huffman of 24/7 Sports. Now let's shift gears to this Arizona 2020 class. I know that some of the top players still available, a couple of wide receivers, Brendan Rice, Matt Polk. Just what have you seen out of them recently, as it seems like they're starting to get close to making commitments?
Yeah, it seems like Polk looked like he could be getting close to a decision earlier in the spring. Oklahoma State, where his dad played, is still a big factor in his recruitment. Cal had an official visit from Polk. They're still weighing heavily in his decision. So a decision could be coming at some point for him. Brendan Rice, on the other hand, he was all set to make a decision. I think he had said kind of what, late May, early June, as kind of his ideal timeline for a decision. Took an official visit to Colorado the last weekend of the spring official visit period, then decided to push back his recruitment, but did take an unofficial to Michigan during the summer, and then was back in the Big House this weekend for their season opener against Middle Tennessee State. Raved about the visit. I think Michigan's in a very, very good spot for Brendan Rice. I think that, you know, he's still going to be looking at some of these other schools. There was a lot of buzz early on for Oregon. Colorado made a big impression on him when he held that official visit out to Boulder. But Michigan right now has been getting all the buzz with Rice. Obviously, there's some connections there with his dad and Jim Harbaugh. Even though his dad never coached, or Jim Harbaugh never coached his dad in San Francisco, those two paths crossed numerous times. And right now, I think Michigan is the team to beat for Brendan Rice. But it's still a long way to go. There's other teams that are recruiting him that continue to try, you know, they're not giving up hope yet, and they're kind of hoping that his pause and his delay in making a decision means there's still a little bit of a crack open for them to get after him.
When you look at this Arizona class, you know, multiple classes down the road, 2020, 2021, and 2022, just who I'm going to reset, and because I do not, that was not English. All right, 3, 2, 1. When you look at this entire Arizona recruiting landscape, you know, multiple classes here down the line, who do you want to see more of? Who has jumped out to you that could be an intriguing prospect as the season progresses or even a couple years down the road?
Well, I would say I'm really looking forward to seeing more and more of Quinton Sumerville over these next couple of years. He's a player that really jumped onto the scene early on. But, you know, a lot of it was just kind of early anticipation of him, early evaluations, early development. But he's still got a little bit of a ways to go to be that elite prospect. But he's on the right track. He's got all the tools. He's got all the makeup. Still a little bit on that raw side, but he's got a lot of upside. So you just want to see naturally him over these next couple of years really realize that potential that he has. He's been our top-rated player out of Arizona for the last couple of years in his class, so we just want to continue to see that development. Steven Ortiz is another kid. I mean, I loved him this spring when I saw him on the 7-on-7 circuit. Just want to see him get a little bit thicker. That's really the only knock on him right now is he's a little bit slight in size, but his cover skills, his ability to play the position is excellent. He's a high-level prospect as a DB. Just needs to get a little bit thicker. I'll tell you, the guy who's actually, I think, a top-3 player in the state right now, I'm just looking forward to seeing, period, is Tosh Baker. And I'll get that chance to see him when Pinnacle plays the Eastside Catholic. Obviously, we know that he's an elite prospect. He had offers from all over the country. He's headed to Notre Dame. He's the number 3 tackle in the country, an elite athlete playing basketball as well. But other than his football film, we haven't seen him do much football during the offseason because of AAU basketball. So I'm looking forward to the chance to see him in person. And he's going to, like I said, have that opportunity to really showcase his skill set against the number 1 prospect in the country, who's a defensive lineman, JT Tuimoloau. I'm probably most eager to see a guy who's a senior right now, who in 4 months from now will be probably off to college as an All-American. But I just want to see how good he looks, because that 6'8 basketball player, you know, getting a lot of comparisons to another former Notre Dame lineman from out this way, who played basketball in the offseason in Ronnie Stanley. But there's a lot of people that think Tosh Baker might be better at that same stage. I'm looking for that opportunity to finally get to see that in person myself.
Brandon Huffman, there is a reason you are the best in the business. Thanks so much. And make sure to keep it to the recruiting roundup here each and every week on Sports 360 AZ.
Joining me now is former Cardinals Pro Bowl defensive end Bertrand Berry and my longtime broadcast partner on Cards OT. B-Train, you ready for the regular season?
Oh, definitely ready for the regular season. And, you know, the preseason, you understand it's a necessary evil. But, yeah, let's get on with the games that actually count.
Well, and the other thing is, look, you called all of these games on Cardinals radio, so you saw all of it. But given the fact that this is not just vanilla, this is a completely new offense in some ways to the NFL. Even though I know the concepts are similar, but we're going to see a lot of things on Sunday that maybe you don't expect. And some of them maybe you do, because, of course, we know what Cliff Kingsbury's offense is all about. But what do you expect against the Lions, and how do you think the Lions' D is going to attack this?
Well, I expect there to be a few wrinkles, as you talked about, Jody. I know Coach Kingsbury has kept it close to the vest. He hadn't really shared a lot. They haven't shown a lot with the media out there. So I'm sure everybody in State Farm Stadium, for the most part, will be seeing something that they hadn't seen before. I'm just excited to see how it looks against the Detroit Lions. But knowing with the Lions and what they're going to do and their coaching staff, I just truly believe that they're going to try to bring a lot of pressure. You probably will see a lot of the same game plan that you saw against the Raiders when Coach Gruden and company really went after Kyler Murray. I think they're going to try to confuse them a lot with a lot of different looks. And, you know, with Coach Kingsbury, I think they're going to just really try to be physical with this group, because the quickest way to defeat a team and demoralize them is to just out-physical them. And so I think they're going to test that out early on, but we'll see what happens.
I mean, the X factor is Kyler Murray, and as good as he is as a runner, we've seen that at the college level. We saw it a little bit in the preseason. I mean, his arm is what really has impressed me, and he can get rid of the ball real quick. How do you think this passing attack is going to look?
Well, I know the way that he's going to survive is getting the ball out of his hands really fast. And I think the inside slot receivers are going to be really focused and really showcased at the beginning of the season. You know, they're going to take their shots downfield for sure. But I think really just keeping Kyler upright initially and getting him confidence is going to be imperative. When you start looking at the Detroit Lions and what they want to do, I definitely anticipate that pass rush trying to be effective and really trying to disrupt what they want to do and testing out this offensive line, because yes, they've made some upgrades, but it's still the unknown as to what they really are as a unit. And it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with, and I'm sure that pressure will definitely be part of the equation.
Now, defensively, it's near and dear to your heart. You know how important it is to, number one, stop the run. So philosophically, it looks like this season, everyone's on the same page. They know what they want to do. But personnel-wise, how do you think that's going to really show itself, especially in week one here?
Well, they've got to go out and they've got to make sure that they are doing what they need to do as far as responsibilities. Everybody knows their assignment and that everybody executes their assignment. The last thing that you can have is people that are unsure of what they are supposed to do, because I do believe that coaching staff in Detroit is definitely up to the challenge of trying to impose their will from a running game standpoint. They've seen the same games we've seen during the preseason, and it's been a struggle the last couple seasons for the Cardinals stopping the run. So, of course, you're going to attack that, and why wouldn't you? I mean, I think anybody that's worth their salt is going to test you and see if you've indeed figured it out. And if you haven't, then there's no need to try to do anything else.
So the obvious thing everybody knows, and it's unfortunate for the Cards, they're without their two top corners, Robert Alford due to injury, Patrick Peterson due to suspension. But I think if we look at the positive side, how do you think these young guys are going to fill in, especially a guy like Byron Murphy?
I think they're going to fit in really well. With Byron, he's a guy, a local kid, and he's got a Buda Baker guy that he played with at the University of Washington. So it's not as if he's going out there by himself solo with no real allies with him. You know, it's not unfamiliar as far as the people that are working around him. The fact that he's been here in Phoenix, grew up here, and the fact that he's with Buda, I think that's going to go a long way. And, you know, he's a physically gifted young man. Mm-hmm. So I think just the combination of all those things is going to allow him to go out and play well. But they're going to have to make sure that they go out and get it done and not worry too much about a bad play. Bad plays will happen. As a rookie, you're going to make mistakes, but you can't focus on those and you can't let those determine your overall outcome and your thought process. You have to be able to have a short-term memory and to put it out of your mind as quickly as possible.
Now, let me ask you, football season's underway, high school and college, and, of course, train station is new for you going into this year. How has that been for you, seeing young men that you're training now at high school level going out there and performing?
Well, I love it. Being able to teach young guys and being able to give them the gifts that I've been given over my career has definitely been a blessing. It's something that I've done for the last couple of years, but I hadn't done it as a businessman, and being able to put this into a business model and really go out and share what I love so much with other young men is really something that I've always thought about doing, but I didn't realize it was something that I was so passionate about until I did a few camps with Under Armour, and I really appreciate the opportunity that they gave me. And this all happened. This took a while. This took about 2-3 years to develop, but we're here now, and I am definitely excited about working with these young men. I've got a couple guys in here now and definitely looking for more. So the more, the merrier, and hopefully this is just the start of a beautiful relationship with me and all of those young pass rushers out here in the Valley.
All right. Well, we saw your determination during your career, so no question, it's no surprise to me that you've taken a few years to create Train Station and helping these young kids get to that next level. B-Train, I know we're all excited about the season. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Jody. Thanks for having me.